Hello, everybody. I'm Jason Rance. You are watching and or listening to the After Show Podcast Live, returning to our third reunion, a reunion that no one actually asked for. It's Rance and Burns, that's Seth Burns. Hello.
Hi, Jason Rance.
There must be a group of people
to mention the diminished desire for us to speak to one another at the top of every episode.
I feel like it's necessary. And by the way, I kind of feel like there might be a generation of fans who don't know that we used to co-host a show together.
Oh, yeah, there's. I mean, it would be the overwhelming majority of people.
Have no clue who the hell you are.
No idea. I mean, how long has it been? It's been 2 years?
Two and a half?
Two years? That long? Yeah, I don't know. For quite a while. We've spent more time over the past few years not hosting a show together than hosting a show together.
Yes, that is true.
It was a very, very brief co-hosting relationship that we had, actually.
Which is weird, because I have a better relationship with you than I have anyone I work with.
Yeah, I know. It was really strange. And, of course, after you went your separate solo ways, I went my separate solo ways. I don't know how you like doing that. I find that just unbelievably dull to speak to yourself. Like, you
want to know the real reason behind that? And this is going to sound like a joke. It's you don't have the same ego as I do. And I don't mean that in a negative or a positive. It's just, it is.
No, it is true. It's when you play off of somebody, they can sort of gin up passion about an issue that you might not. Because I remember your big thing every single day. SDOT, Seattle Department of Transportation, WashDOT. And I was like, I don't care about these things. But then you would say something ridiculous, and then suddenly I would care without that sort of foil or voice, you know, bantering back to you. It's hard just to monologue on things, especially, you know, it would be easier for a national show, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But to be, you know, 80% local,
I'm not really 80% local. I mean, with the exact, so coronavirus aside, because
COVID's changed things,
But before that, I wasn't 80% local. I was probably 50-50, maybe 60-40, but for the most part, 50-50. There's so much national, especially on a political talk station. Yeah. And not that the show is a political show by its nature, but I am more interested in politics anyway. But
it's absolutely a political show. Your show.
But not by its nature. I don't set out to do a political show versus I'm a show who talks about politics, because it's not like I exclusively talk about political stories. We talk about news.
No,
it's a news show. Well,
yeah,
that's not true. I mean, there are certainly national shows that exclusively talk, or 90% talk. On everywhere. Yeah, you're nuts. Don says she had no clue who you were. But then Gail says that she loved both of us when we were together, but she loves my solo show because you're just dead weight.
I know. Why is that? I mean, it's weird. That's somewhat hurtful. What don't you love then? You just love the radio one.
She just loves everything. She just likes the idea of someone talking. Thank you, Gail. It is true that you do have to have a sense of ego. And one could, this is me being self-deprecating, I suppose. But it can be a negative. It has to be this all-consuming ego that you think everything that you say is smart and right and the world needs to hear. If you don't have that, you can't really do a solo show.
Yeah, and I'm like 80% there. Because there are certain issues that I feel 100% confident on. Immigration, safe injection. There's things that I can really get passionate about. But then there's things like It's the fake bravado of a talk show host to pretend they're an expert on everything, but it's also a mandatory requirement for the job. And I feel like that's easier to do when you have points to pick apart from a co-host or, you know, buck up against. When you're doing it yourself, I would also have just Jeff staring at me, which was weird. And I think your time slot is, I think I could do it better from 3 p to 6 p. At 7 o'clock at night, when you're there, and then there's just another person, one other person staring at you, or two other people, both with their personality quirks, and like for most of the world, the day is over.
Mm-hmm.
It's just I found it to be like an overall joyless experience.
Can I stop you for 1 second?
Yeah.
Someone just entered the room with the private link to be on our webcam. I have no idea who this is.
I know who it is.
Who is it?
I think it's my dad. I think I sent it. I sent him that link. I sent him that link instead of the
Hi,
the
dad.
Did you sign on? Hey, can you boot him? Oh, there he is. Well, I accidentally sent him the show link instead of the like the enter broadcast studio. Like, hey, look, you're wearing pink today, not orange.
Yeah,
it's different. That's my mom behind her. Behind him.
See, this could only happen with you because there's no way in the world that I would ever even talk to my mother.
Yeah,
let alone give her a link to something.
True. That's very, very true. No, I'm very familiar with your relationship with your mother.
Hello, you call, parents to Zach Burns.
So, Jason, meet Oris. Did you guys, you never met?
We met once at the station when you were in, like, in the building 2.5 years. Like, this was towards the end. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we didn't know it was the end, did we? Or, I mean, but.
I don't think we were on together at that point. I think it was after the set, but I don't remember. Oris, how are you? Long time no see. You did not respond to my last text message.
Yeah, wrong link, Dad. You know, trying to boost the numbers, Jason. So relatives count.
Yeah, well, if you want to boost the numbers, get me off.
Okay. Yeah, that's very true.
You will not regale us with past stories of NHL history?
They just get bigger and better.
Yeah, they really do. My dad's like now a 7-time Stanley Cup winning. It's amazing.
That does not change. The guys I beat up, it does.
That is true. Yeah.
So do you look at the sport now and just say these are a bunch of wimps? It used to be so much tougher.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that seems to be that is the theme of talking to anyone in any league, regardless of the sport. They always say, we were real men back then. Now they're a bunch of wimps.
Anyone over 60 about any industry ever. You can go to a Ford factory and, you know, the people that used to work there, I think the people that work there now are weak.
Oh, now all these people, they need gloves and glasses and brakes, please. When I was there, and by the way, I walked 30 miles in snow to school every day alone in the dead of winter.
So weird.
Hey, Oris, I do have a question for you.
I want to say one thing. Our nutritionist, our nutritionist back then was whose turn it was to get the donuts.
Yeah.
Really didn't pay that close attention to that stuff, did they?
No, they did not.
So Oris, and by the way, for folks who are watching, Oris Kinderchuk is a former NHL player. You know, as we're, and his wife and Zach's mom is behind him. at a point, we're returning at some point to sports in a COVID era, and it seems like there's not going to be an actual crowd. How much would that impact you, not having people and the energy behind you, you know, when you're playing hockey or any sport?
Well, I think where it would really show up is, you know, especially if it's a vital game, and you're at home and it's to win a series, maybe during the course of the season. Believe me, it would feel really weird when, you know, you've got more people, more birds in the stand than you do people. So I think it would really, really feel weird when you step out onto the ice and there's just silence. But if you were in a real big game, playoffs, 6th game, 7th game, where you had to win it, I wouldn't feel the same.
It's funny because just from a fan perspective, I did change my mind a little bit going into just from I watch soccer. That's what I like. And I was wondering what soccer would be like if you didn't have the crowd cheering, because especially when you go to the matches, that's a huge part of the soccer culture.
So over much weekend, less annoying. Much less annoying.
Yeah. I mean, it depends.
They don't cheer. They sing the whole time.
It is fun. It's an atmosphere, and there's a personality to it. So over the weekend, the Bundesliga, which is the German league, they restarted. And I was wondering if it was going to be the same. And I going in thinking it's probably not going to be enjoyable. I don't know if it's mostly because I just haven't had any sports. I watched every single match and I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah.
I watched every single moment.
Even
I've been watching Korean baseball.
I mean, even without the but even without the crowd, and I was able weirdly to enjoy it slightly more. The thing about any European soccer league is their fans are much different than Americans. Yeah, you screw up, they're booing, and it really weirdly does change the atmosphere. And I did the game of play, the level of play wasn't particularly good because everyone's kind of worried about getting an injury at this point. So they're going to slow go it. But I actually really liked it. I just can't tell if it's because I am thirsty for the content.
Are they adding crowd noise at all?
No, nothing. They weirdly still have the announcer who, so when you score, he'll make the announcement. Goal.
It's very weird.
I think the big thing in the fan base in North America and say in Europe is in the North Americans, they're on their way to the concession stand. I noticed when I watched the European League, the Premier League, those people don't move. They watch the whole game entirely before they move. And, you know, they're into it a lot more, I think, than a lot of sports in the U.S. It's going to a game in the U.S. has become more of an event and then just a game itself. And I think it takes a little bit away from the game. You've got corridors filled with air hockey. You've got computers everywhere. You've got all that. When you watch a European game, soccer game, they're there to watch the game.
Yeah, that is the one thing, because I've been to quite a few EPL matches, and it's mostly the Spurs who I've seen just because I'm in central London on my twice annual vacations, because as a solo host, I get to get all the money to the show. I don't have to share it now with a co-host.
Yeah, no divvying it up, right?
It is very different than an American match, and you're right that they're there to watch, but they'll also walk out very early in protest if the team's just playing poorly.
Well, you know,
it's a send a message.
That's not the true hard fan. You know, that I remember there's people back in our day when we were, you couldn't get a ticket. There was always that 5 minute crowd that would leave. We could be 2-1, losing 2-1, whatever. There was a 5 minute crowd that would always start to leave. And I guess their theory was they're going to beat the traffic. And that was it. And it happened every game. Now, it didn't happen in the playoffs, cup years and things like that. But there was always that crowd that was going to leave no matter what.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, I get, because there's people that go to the games, not because they're fans, just because like going anywhere out for a night. It's something to do. You bring your date, especially now more the corporations have bought up the box seats and everything like that. And you're only paying attention 30%, you know, to what's actually happening on the field or the ice. But the one thing that I never got in high school, this was the weirdest leaving early experience ever. I went to a baseball game with my friend Chris Ranieri and his dad. And his dad was one of those guys who, I guess, didn't trust the box scores that showed up in the newspaper the next day. So he would keep track of like everything that happened. They give you a sheet if you ask for it.
Yeah.
Very few people do. So he's doing this diligently through the entire game, but then we still leave out during the middle of the seventh inning. Like, what an incomplete night of work. Why bother doing this?
It is weird. I don't quite know how they do it. And I also don't understand the folks who bring the radio in for whatever sport and they're listening, because it's on a delay. We no longer live in a world in which there's no delay.
Probably not.
But we don't. Like here in Seattle, when we were running them on the Cairo end, it was still on a delay.
It was. It wouldn't matter as much for baseball, which I don't know. I've never seen someone do it for Sounders games. I've definitely for Mariners games. But it's still better than a grown man bringing his glove or dressing it all like a base. There's two things that I don't know. They see a lot. You see a lot at any live sporting event. It's weird to me still, not for children to do it. If you're a child and you wear a jersey of your favorite player, that makes sense to me. Because children can get away with really wearing anything, but if you're like our age, Jason, could you imagine? I couldn't imagine wearing a Russell Wilson jersey to a Seahawks game. I would feel absurd.
Well, you shouldn't feel absurd in that moment because,
I
but
do.
every But everyone there is wearing a jersey.
I feel weird for all of them.
Yeah, I would feel weird wearing it to the office.
I would feel like when I see a couple and then there's a husband and wife, and then the husband is wearing a Doug Baldwin jersey or whatever. That's just weird. Like, oh, my husband's wearing like another man's uniform. Like Doug Baldwin would never put on a UPS uniform. It's a strange thing. And then the weirdest thing to me is when you go to a Mariners game and wear like a Tom Brady jersey. You're just like, I just like sports. I'm not even at the right sport. This player is not playing today, but I just felt like throwing this on. That's a strange thing to do.
That is weird.
Yeah.
Well, it was nice chatting with you, but it's
time. Are we boring you?
No.
I'm sorry. Were we boring you? I thought we were having a good chat.
You know, the one thing that I find different going to a game, and I think the people that were in the stadium 70s and 80s, and they saw the same people there every night.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're not seeing the same person there because their tickets are too expensive maybe, or they just can't afford the time. People became friends going to a game. And I think that really, really boosted the morale of the local team. People got to know each other. But nowadays, you're probably sitting next to a corporate person at one night from one company. The next night, you'll be sitting with another corporate person from another company. And I think that's where – and the other thing that's died, I think, are rivalries. You just don't have the rivalries anymore like you used to.
Right.
Well, not in baseball, at least here. I mean, soccer we definitely still do. We have Portland Seattle rivalry that is kind of.
Right.
So from Sounders, Portland.
No, I'm Seattle's is, but I mean the Mariners.
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying. Like, we're not going to have one. Although, weirdly, with the Seahawks, it felt like the 49ers were becoming a rival.
Well, really, for the one game. I mean, yeah,
But it was weird. There was no real reason for us to have 49ers beef.
I guess not. We're both kind of tech hubs. Maybe it was an economical thing. I don't know. All right, Dad, go to bed.
Nice to see you, Dad.
It's late.
I got to go cook.
Yeah.
Okay, you do that. Nice to see you again.
Get me off. Hey, enjoy.
Thanks. Yeah. Bye. That was funny.
Yeah, I did that on purpose.
Did you really? For a second there, it was Ranson Burns and Burns.
It was. Burns, right. That's his last name and mine.
It's funny because he's cooking. I'm cooking too. Can we say it's no longer, even though I think the concept of a sous vide is still snooty, just the idea of it. And I think if you it's really not. And so I bought a sous vide machine about a year ago. It was like 99 bucks, maybe 120. It's a jewel. It is the best way to cook meats. And fish, but I use it mostly for steaks because I'm not good at cooking a steak on a stove. A cast iron, whatever, I can't quite get it right.
So you just sear it on the cast iron at the end?
Yeah, so right now, this is another.
Because I have a sous vide. I bought one because of your recommendation.
Yeah, it's so,
and we
it's
have,
so easy.
We have yet to use it. Actually, we used it once and ruined ravioli.
Yeah,
we're
going
to get around
to put pasta in it, I don't think.
No, well, the recipe called for it.
Another snooty sounding meal because I was always told that filet mignon is just crazy expensive. It's prohibitively expensive. I got it for 12 bucks at
the
Amazon.
Whole thing or 12 bucks a pound?
12 bucks for a single serving of a filet mignon.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how many ounces, but
weirdly does. 12 bucks a pound. You'd never get filet for that. But Amazon does specials on filet mignon quite frequently.
Yeah, but this wasn't even a special. This was their normal. This is, I think, their brand. Yeah, it was just a normal thing. So I bought it. And that was one of those types of meat where I know that's a finicky steak. You can kind of screw up some other steaks. It's still going to taste relatively good,
yeah,
but not this one. So I've got it in
the
snooty.
It's less fatty.
Well, yeah.
It's considered snooty because it's called filet mignon.
Yeah, I mean, that's all. I don't think it's a snooty meat.
Like T-bone.
Or the butt.
Flank. That's pork, I think. Yeah, flank.
You can
steak.
Get a round butt. Isn't that a steak? Round butt? No.
Probably. I mean, let's not go over cuts of meat.
Well, I mean, is there anything in the news today?
I don't know.
So yeah, that's. I'm cooking that in a little pot, and it'll be ready in 37 minutes.
Well, what are your sides?
I have not created any sides yet.
Oh, okay.
I will be charring some green onion, which I love.
Mm.
Or scallions, whatever. I don't know. Is there a difference between...
I think scallions are green onions.
Yeah, they're green onions. Yeah. They should not be onions. Have two names? Well, they're not round. They're straw, basically. It looks like grass. Right.
Yeah, it does.
I don't think that should be called an onion. I think it's...
We just used scallions, too, for our salmon. A couple of evenings ago. That's weird. Both of us using scallions.
That is so weird, my friend. We're very simpatico. No wonder we get along so well. We have the same taste in irrelevant side dishes that aren't really substantial enough to be considered a side dish.
Or relatable content. Have you watched, speaking of which, the streaming service that I can't figure out how big CBS All Access is. So everybody's got...
There is no way that it's making money because no one talks about it. And yet they're very clearly putting a ton of money into The Good Fight.
The Good Fight's got to be expensive. They did Picard with Jean-Luc Picard, which Patrick Stewart, I would imagine, was pretty pricey.
I bet is bringing in people, the Star Trek nerds.
Probably. Although I don't think they were very happy with it. But either way, they probably
still purchase. How much is CBS?
I think $11. I think a month, which is too much for just a handful of shows.
$10. They have different plans. So they have plans starting at $6 a month, which I'm assuming means you're getting some commercials, and maybe it goes to the $11.99 without commercials.
Well, they have a show that the most famous person I've seen in it so far is Peter Skarsgård, which you'd recognize him. Mm-hmm. You might not know the name, but you definitely recognize him.
I know who he is.
Called Interrogation. So it's kind of, it was built as a choose your own adventure thing, but it's not really. So you watch the first episode, then you can watch episodes 2 through 9 in whatever order you choose, and then watch the last episode in order. And it's really good. It is, so far we watched the first episode last night. We're going to probably do at least two tonight.
It's an hour.
It's about an hour.
Or 45 minutes, whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's hour long drama. It's very, very different than, most other like crime procedurals in that, they just leave a lot of doubt as to, you know, when I think of crime procedurals, the go-to is Law and Order. And right away, you know who the good person is and who the bad person is. The vagueness of this is actually really entertaining because a couple of the shows that I've watched recently, you are 11 minutes in and you're like, I know exactly what season or episode 10 is going to look like. Outer Banks being one of them. Mm. That show, while everyone in it is drop-dead gorgeous and the Outer Banks is a really, really pretty place to visit, it is not worth your time. And it keeps, it's still like number 2 on Netflix trending.
Yeah. So the best, it's not a procedural in the same way, but it's a similar concept of whodunit, is Broadchurch. It's a BBC show that it's on Netflix. And I watch, it's 3 seasons. The first 2 are connected. The third is a new case. Yeah. The second season is it's fine. The third season
is outstanding.
Is so good. And that is a legitimate, I had no clue this was coming, and every other episode is a potential suspect, and then they're gone. But are they? Are they still just...
Right.
It is so clever. And Olivia Colman is in it, who is one of now my favorite actresses, mostly because of this show and the Queen. What's the... She just won an Academy Award for...
With Emma Stone. Academy Award?
Yeah, she was Best Supporting Actress. She was The Favorite? The Favorite?
Oh, The Favorite.
Yeah. So she's the queen.
18th century lesbianism, isn't that what it is?
Did you not see it?
I still haven't yet to see it, actually.
It is outstanding. It is outstanding. And I generally don't like period pieces. This one is weird enough because of the director. I can't remember his name. The guy who did The Lobster.
It's just
a weird name.
I love his movies.
It's his most accessible movie.
Yeah, The Lobster is weird.
Yeah, The Lobster is
weird. Like The Lobster, if Tom Tangney was a movie, it would be The Lobster.
Yeah, I didn't like The Lobster. I did like the deer one,
Killing of the Sacred Deer.
Yes, that one was really good and creepy.
It's really good. It's very creepy.
It's just an uncomfortable movie. But The Favorite is outstanding. It's hysterical. It is hysterical.
Funny. Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Funny. It's a comedy.
Okay, I thought it was. Yeah. I thought it was really dark.
It's a dark comedy, but it's a comedy. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, I loved it.
Fargo is an example of a dark comedy.
Oh, is it? Yeah. It's my understanding that there are a couple fellas who are brothers who wrote
the Coen brothers.
Wrote it and directs it.
Now, some people, their names are Ethan and Joel. Some people really like Ethan, and some people really like Joel.
Joel has a kind face.
Joel, I feel like if I were just to have a beer with someone, which is why I vote for people as well, I would probably pick Joel. Although I feel like Ethan is probably the more mature. Joel just seems like the kind of guy that I'd want to hang out with.
So Joel I'd hang out with, but Ethan I want in charge of my film.
Oh, I forgot which one I mentioned first. Joel. Yeah, right.
Joel.
Yeah, right. But Joel's probably going to be the one who brings on the great actors because everybody just wants to be around him because of his magnetic personality.
But the problem is then they're not truly committed to the script. They're just there for the free booze. And the one that attracts these high-paid actors, free booze.
They love booze. Ben Affleck drinks all the time. George Clooney had his own tequila. Clooney sold his tequila brand for $1 billion.
$1 billion.
Yeah. I don't think $1 billion of tequila has sold in the history of humanity yet. I feel like that was someone who just wanted to be in a meeting with Clooney. Like, was just that enamored with him.
Yeah. Is there another booze that the body treats in such a bipolar way than tequila? Because I wasn't doing shots of tequila, but I was able to have it in mixed drinks. So whether we're talking about a margarita to I think they're in Long Island, right?
I think everything's in a Long Island.
Yeah.
It's so kind of up to your bartender.
Totally. So I used to be able to at least taste it and not want to projectile vomit. At one point, and I remember where I was on Broadway at that Mexican restaurant that sort of in between the school and the old movie theater on Harvard Exit. I can't remember what it's called. I was at that restaurant and I was there and I had a margarita. Afterwards, we were to go to a friend's house nearby who was having some sort of party. And it was around Christmas time because I remember him. What's that disgusting eggnog? So we finished dinner and I had one. And this wasn't like one of those massive, I had one drink. We're walking back and I'm starting to feel very, very, very nauseous, like wanting to just stop and just start to puke. I get to his house and this was someone who I didn't really know all that well. It was a friend of a friend. And they offered me eggnog. And at that point, I almost lost it everywhere.
The offer of eggnog?
Just from the offer, the thought of eggnog.
Thought of that thickness.
So the way it
just coats.
And so afterwards, I didn't puke there. I puked maybe 3 minutes after we left. I just puked.
Oh, you got out of the house.
Oh, yeah. Done. And I held it for a while. And then I was getting to the point where I was sweating. Everyone's had that moment of, this is going to happen. I'd like for it to happen now, but I can't have it happen now.
You like swallow differently. Like
take shallow breaths. When I'm sick, I take shallow breaths because if I breathe in too much, it will trigger something and stuff will come up. So I puked afterwards and I didn't really think anything of it.
In front of people?
No. Well, my friend, this was when we left. This was on the
outside?
Way.
Outside?
Yeah. This was outside. It was on someone's lawn. It was in a bush.
And you complain about others dirtying up Capitol Hill.
This is not my fault. It was in a bush. You couldn't see it. Puke is okay. It wasn't on a sidewalk.
All right, then I want to see a blog from you on My Northwest come next week.
With photos.
Just please, if you're going to puke in a bush because that's okay.
Puke in a bush. So about a week later, I had another drink that was with tequila, and this was at a club.
Yeah.
And I definitely left 4 minutes after I started to have that drink because I started almost immediately. Starting to dry heave. And again, you're in a club, you can't do it. I remember getting into the Uber, praying I didn't puke in the Uber. I get home and it's done. And my friend comes, or one of the friends, because this was when I was in a roommate. So one of my roommates came by after 4 hours later. I'm still in the bathroom, just puking and dry heaving. And since then, now even if I smell tequila, it triggers to puke.
Yeah.
Name another booze that does that.
Risky for me, I will say, especially J&B, which I think it's Scotch whiskey. Just the smell of it. And that's going back like 20 years. You know, I was in college one night. I overdid it. But if I catch a whiff, even like, really? Fortunately, like I'm in an age group now where no one really drinks it anymore because it's just gut rot stuff. But yeah, it's the smell almost more than the taste. Because if you're drinking good tequila, it shouldn't have too much flavor. It should go down pretty smooth. But they're all going to have the same tequila smell.
Well, it's the memory. It's like a muscle memory.
It is.
Alcohol
definitely does that. Yeah. And all it takes is one night of overdoing it. It'll probably be the rest of your life.
I didn't overdo it.
Well, I mean, that is weird. You weren't even drunk, I would imagine.
I was not.
It was just a massive tequila. Yeah.
No. It was a normal sized drink. And it was funny because when I realized when it finally clicked with me that it's the tequila,
yeah.
I had a sip of a Long Island iced tea from a friend, not realizing there was tequila in it.
Mm-hmm.
And almost immediately I started to get sick. I felt sick.
Oof, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the worst kind of sick too. Yeah.
I have a thought.
Because you can actually, if you overdid it a couple more times, you could actually conjure up that sickness just thinking about it.
Yeah.
What is that?
So what does this look like? Booze, right?
It's vodka, yeah.
It looks like vodka. It's hand sanitizer made by a distillery called
Pure
Liquors.
I heard they've been doing that.
Okay. It smells awful. It smells, and it's so I had Peyton smell the other one that I have. And he can't quite figure it out either. What is a booze that has almost like a chocolatey scent, but like a deep, is it rum? I can't, because I'm not an alcoholic and I don't drink very often. So I'm having a hard time. I could place vodka because that's the drink. If I drink, that's what I would have.
Right. And vodka, vodka smells.
It smells like rubbing alcohol.
Yeah, exactly. Gin doesn't have it. Rum. The thing about rum is that rum can probably more than any other what I would call hard liquor can vary in flavors.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can have. So I could see there being like kind of a chocolatey type rum.
It's just it tastes.
It doesn't look very thick. It looks like water.
It is. All of them are water. None of the alcohol based like from the distilleries, at least that I've seen, because I now own two that I bought. They're all liquid.
Why are you buying those ones?
This one, I was just kind of curious. That was purely it. They sold it for like $4 for this big thing. And then another one, I have like a little one that I just keep in my backpack if I'm out and I just need to clean my hands for some reason.
Yeah.
It's super, it smells like awful. And yet I feel compelled to continue to sniff it.
I get that.
It's super weird.
And there probably ask, like you mentioned, ask other people to sniff it. There's something about some bad smells that you just like, you want to revisit and share.
This clearly smells gross. It makes you want to smell this. Smell this, friend.
Yeah.
Vincent is saying Kahlua, but I've never had Kahlua.
I don't.
Kahlua, right?
Yeah, Kahlua is Kahlua.
I've never had Kahlua.
That's probably might be it.
But I've never had it.
Okay.
But so it can't be my friend. They can't be my.
It smells chocolatey.
It does, but not. So again, it's not chocolate, but there's like a note of chocolate. You know what I mean? It's not an overwhelming chocolatey flavor. It smells of alcohol with a note of chocolate that's kind of deep. I don't know. How
these are like sideways outtakes.
Here, hold on. Sniff.
Oh, that's terrible.
It's so gross.
How weird and isolated is your life now?
I go to work every day.
Oh, you do? Oh, that's right. You told me that. Yeah, you're going to the office. Are the bulk of people broadcasting now in the building or
there's
like, I'm really curious about that.
Totally. So I'm in the building. Curly's in the building.
Of course.
Who else? Ursula's in the building.
Oh, she is.
And I want to say Colleen's sometimes in the building, but it's, I think she's doing some at home, some at the station.
Right.
And then I think, I don't know what they're doing at night. I've definitely seen Mason, but then not, what's his face? Mike. But then sometimes I see Mike, but not, so it's possible they're taking turns at home. I don't know. And none of the sports people, all the sports people are out.
Oh, they are. Huh. I have to give some credit to sports writers out there, being that 90% of your content is based on activity on a field. I saw an article the other day. Well, one, everybody has to be thrilled about The Last Dance. I don't know if you watched it, the ESPN documentary on the Bulls.
Michael Jordan. Or
Jordan's last season. It was great. ESPN does really good documentaries, whether you like sports or not. So ESPN has the worst app ever. So I read CBS Sports and I check it every day, not because there's anything to be updated on per se, but because I want to see how they're filling this column space. And this one article, I think, has to be the best treading water article I've ever read. It was the all-NBA team for the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. All the top 10 players in NBA history with hyphens in their name.
Oh my
respect
God.
To that author. That is someone who's
still trying to
crank out 600, 700 words on something that's just not happening right now. Clearly, it couldn't be Last Dance related because all the other beat writers are covering that. Like every single minute of The Last Dance has been covered, not just by ESPN, which obviously it has, but like I'm looking at my CBS ad or CBS app right now, and 10 of the top 12 articles are about The Last Dance, about another network's documentary.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Speaking of the sports ball, our mutual friend Lee Lonsberry is in the chat. Hi, Lee. He asked, what are the frames hanging over my shoulder? Those are all some artistic drawings of Sounders posters. But hi, Lee.
Hey, are they really?
Mm-hmm. But the good
one. I hate your soccer fandom.
It's just in my office. I've got so many Man City stuff. I don't have enough room here for Man City stuff, though.
Ew. And then that abbreviation, it's like saying South by. We have time to say Manchester, right? Oh my
God. Manchester City.
There.
FC.
Everything you like immediately just becomes repugnant to me.
That's fine.
Alkaline Trio. I was a fan of theirs.
Who?
Alkaline Trio.
Oh, yeah. What was their big hit? They had a big hit.
I don't know, but you like them.
Do I? Or did
you told me? Or no? What was the band that
we've never talked about? Alkaline Trio. I am so
no, it wasn't. You're right. It was somebody. It was someone similar though. Someone just innocuous, vaguely sort of punk stuff.
Not Reliant.
You were a big fan. Yes.
Oh yeah, they're my favorite band.
Yeah, exactly. Reliant K. I mean, they're in.
They have a live album out
because one exists, the other doesn't need to.
God, they're good. They put out
they have a weird Christian vibe.
Coronavirus. So yeah, this is kind of interesting. And what they would be, if they didn't start off as a Christian rock band, they'd be much bigger. So they started off as Christian rock and then they started to grow. MTV picked up on one of their songs that was not overtly religious. And so they didn't want to get stuck in that, but they had some albums out on religious labels. And so some of their songs were that. But they clearly were brave, and every single album that went by, they, as any band, they'll mature because he's the lead singer, Matt Thiessen. He's my age, and so you know, each album he put out was about more, you know, life learning themes about being in love and blah 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 blah. And there was very clearly a turn away from overtly religious stuff. And I went down to Portland for a concert that it was him. It was House of Heroes, which was another kind of Christian rock band, not overtly so, but they were known in the Christian rock. And then Taking Back Sunday's lead singer was solo, and he was doing something. And I'm there, and I got there. He's opening first. He was cussing in his music, and the fans in the audience were outraged. They were
Really?
You heard literally at a Christian rock show. Like, people were saying that. It was not a Christian rock show, but because their brand was so identified with that community, they would show up. And yeah, it was curious about that. And then Matt Thiessen, some of the interviews I've seen, he kind of gets a little annoyed by people bringing that sort of stuff up because he's like, I'm more than that. But he got pigeonholed so early, and his music isn't necessarily.
Well, now he knows how non-evangelicals feel. Hell, he gets a little bit annoyed when someone brings that up.
Just a little. But then in his last album, they have more overtly really, because he's probably at this point, you're like, I'll sing about what I want. They're established enough where they can put out.
They're probably making a decent living, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, and most of them, there's only two original members left.
There's only two original members of any band ever.
Of any band, that's true.
Blink 182 is somehow they lost like the heart and soul of the band, and then
I thought they got back together.
No, well, they got back together, and it's the guy from Alkaline Trio who took over for the guy who believes in UFOs. But they still call themselves Blink 182. That's a weird thing.
I don't think that's true. I think it's the original members.
It's not the original members.
Blink 182. Let's see. I don't, because I could have sworn, wasn't the big thing where they were getting back together for that Fyre Festival?
No, that was the new version of the band.
No, it's the same. It's Mark Hoppus is still the lead singer.
Mark Hoppus. Well, they had two lead singers. Mark would take a song and then Tom would take a song.
Yeah, but now they have Matt Skiba. Okay.
Yeah, from Alkaline Trio.
Alkaline Trio, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, which
but
is
Travis
right.
Barker is still, and I remember Travis Barker being seen as like one of the most talented drummers.
He's a really good drummer.
But he's lost a little bit on a Blink 182 album.
I would say he's definitely the most talented musician there. I think that's his most commercially successful band, so that's why he sticks with him. But he does drumming for a whole bunch of different punk bands. Hmm. Where he's not like really a permanent member, the Transplants, the Aquabats,
Boxcar Racer, Goldfinger. He was in Goldfinger.
That was the other thing too.
Goldfinger was so good.
Goldfinger had one good song, Here in Your Bedroom. That was a great song.
My head off.
When I say one good song, the that you feel. That I heard.
Oh, that was a great song.
That was a very good song. That was
another random tidbit. The drummer on 21 Pilots was the drummer briefly in House of Heroes, the Christian rock band.
Why is everything that you want to just join our side? You want to become Christian?
Oh, I want nothing to do with you, but I like your music.
Why aren't you listening to like some Jew punk? There's lots of it.
We had it. Do we?
Plenty. Yeah, it's like got no effect.
I don't like punk.
Two of them are. Yeah, clearly.
I don't like
bands masquerading as punk, but I still got something to rebel against, so it's my soundtrack.
Goldfinger put out an album just 3 years ago.
Yeah. Well, everybody who think that's the weird thing. All bands have two original members, but the last band ever to break up was the Beatles. Everybody else since then is still together. Third Eye Blind, who I saw like 4 years ago, and were great.
So
songs that you know.
Didn't we go to? Did you see them at Bumbershoot?
No,
I saw them at Bumbershoot. They were outstanding.
That's right, because you realize you know more songs than you think. So 50%, you're pretty engaged, and in terms of energy level, they were great. But they've released like 7 records since the last time you've ever thought about them, unless they show up at some festival called Bumbershoot. Fastball, you remember them?
They put out stuff.
So much more. The Road.
The way.
Marcy Playground, cranking out stuff. Harvey Danger, Nobody Breaks Up.
Sucked. I'm sorry. I never.
I love that. That one song is good.
The one song is great. Flagpole Seat. Yeah. Great song.
But not indicative of what the rest of their music sounded like.
Exactly.
That.
And I mean, when you think of one hit wonders, probably the first band that comes to mind is Harvey Danger.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a true one-hit wonder. Fastball kind of is too, right?
Fastball definitely was. The 90s, we churned through bands really quickly. I know they did somewhat in the 80s, but bands had more of a staying power. You have a-ha, Dexy's, Midnight Runners, but it seemed like most bands that were on the active rock stations at best had two hits. Like they were just running through acts really, really quickly. I can't think of a band, you know, I mean, Nirvana, I guess, I suppose, for some of the 90s, but that had a breakout hit and then really sustained success afterwards. Except for hip-hop, I guess.
Green Day.
Green Day definitely did, yeah. 311. But then Green Day spawned so many one-hit wonder punk bands, too. Mm-hmm. Ooh, 311 was just the worst music ever had to offer.
They had awful songs.
Terrible.
Smashing Pumpkins.
Green Day refers, I mean, 311 was for people who wore shark necklaces.
Well, yes. Shark necklaces. Totally. Shark and it was very yeah. much, that, I mean, that was driven by, K-Rock made them a band.
Yeah.
Sublime. I never loved.
So I respect Sublime more than I did 311. Yeah. Like, dude.
Soundgarden. Dude, I can think of actually a lot of bands in the mid 90s.
This is sacrilege to say in Seattle, but Chris Cornell's voice irritated me.
Oh, I don't like Soundgarden. I also really don't.
Jam. And I was really into pretty much every other grunge band, even Mudhoney, which I know a lot of people pretend to know and like Mudhoney, but I actually did like Mudhoney.
No one knows who Mudhoney is.
Good, Seattle they do.
People.
But
Toadies they put out a whole bunch of albums. I loved Rubberneck.
The Toadies?
Yeah, Toadies. That was a great album. Rubberneck was a brilliant album. And some of their later stuff was actually really, really good, but no one bought it.
No. I don't know if it's a good thing to have a massive smash hit for your first single. It seems like better to kind of ramp your way up. Because if you just come out...
Yeah, the second album has to be brilliant, and then you're like, oh, they've got an earlier album, and then you buy that.
That was why Green Day had sustained success. Is that Dookie wasn't their first record. It was a hit, but it was their first major label record, but then went back and their earlier records were similar sounding enough that they ended up selling Going Gold.
Mm-hmm.
And now Green Day is terrible.
I've not imagine. Heard any of their stuff.
I still imagine that
they're not good.
I don't know why I stick with them. It's like just Barry Levinson films. Like eventually he's going to make another diner, but it's been a while since he put out something good.
So I did recently on this topic on Instagram, just because now I'm just more bored than I've ever been. And so I've been doing these just sort of year by year takes on the best albums or best bands of the year. 94, 95, best 2 years of rock music in recent history. So I'm not going back into when rock was like pop or like doo-wop crap. I'm just modern rock or alternative, whatever we want to call it. 94, 95, hands down, produced the best albums. Maybe not the best bands that were long-term, but as far as a sustained year, 2 years, 94, 95.
So you would have Siamese Dream that year, Smashing Pumpkins.
Was actually, I think that one was a little bit earlier. I think 95, they actually did do their big album. This was not 1979.
Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness.
But you had, period, you had Green Day, you had them, you had Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, you had Stone Temple Pilots, you had Hole, you had Toadies. All of these bands were about that time. And that, for at least for me, that was the music that I was listening to at the time. So I don't know what other genres and how well they were.
Well, I was kind of over grunge, pretty close to over grunge. Like the minute Kurt Cobain killed himself, I was just done with grunge. And then I started getting
grunge more. Grunge was not good. There was good artists within grunge, but grunge as a whole, I don't think was a great
genre. Well, it's not like punk where there was a West Coast version or hip hop and an East Coast version and everything. There was like 10 grunge bands that really, it's not like there was a Detroit grunge scene. It only happened here. And you're right, it didn't produce that many great bands. You could count them on one hand. And then if you count the ones where the lead singer's still alive, you pretty much just have Pearl Jam, which is sad to think back on.
Pearl Jam, I know they count, but do you view them as a grunge band?
I don't know. I really respect them as a band. It's just to be relevant and, you know, keep fans passionate for going on like 25 years now. But I think that they were lumped in with the grunge scene when they released 10. 10 to me is definitely a grunge album, but I feel like they immediately departed from that scene with her next record in verses.
So you have that.
So I don't know.
Just from a music scene from in the world of rock, it was alternative and grunge. That was the big thing. And then you go
I mean, are you going back to the 80s at all?
No, I'm just saying, saying our childhood for the most part. And then 2000s. 2000s is always kind of interesting because it sort of started off. That was when emo was particularly big. The Dashboard Confessionals.
The worst kind of emo. There's a song called Perfect. You know what song? Sorry, I'm not perfect. It is the worst example of what, because punk became emo, but kind of in an interesting way. And then emo just became these femmy boys with chain wallets trying to impress girls with their sensitivity.
Yeah. It was the
angst. It wasn't angst anymore. It was
sensitive. Emotional man who was not necessarily, and at the time they weren't saying this, but currently you would say it's rejecting toxic masculinity and were in touch with their feminine side, that kind of thing. There wasn't at the time.
It's a very specific reference, but who cares? They all kind of remind me of Freddie Prinze Jr.'s character from She's All That. There's a very brief scene where he's like, he gets really upset with his dad, and his dad's like, I had no idea you felt this way. But he's like got all these stupid emotions about it because he's been hiding his college acceptance letters because his dad bought him a Harvard sweatshirt once when he was like 8. And that's what these songs all remind me of. Like you're railing against this thing. Like Perfect is by Simple Plan.
I don't remember that song.
Oh my God. It is the worst.
Right?
What's that? There's a hit. I don't know if they're Canadian.
Let's see. Okay, I found it. Let's see.
It is horrendous.
I'm trying to see if I reckon that. Because I like Simple Plan.
You will.
Some of it I like.
I think they're indicative. Charlotte. Of
Let's skip around a little bit.
Yeah. Get to the vocals.
And talk to me. Did I grow up according to plan?
Pause for a second. They're singing this while signed to Capitol Records. Like, there's nobody, even if your dad had that, you know, cliche dream of you following in his.
Uh-oh, he left. I'm assuming he will return momentarily. Until then, let's listen to a little bit of Simple Plan. Oh, here he is. You dropped off.
Yeah, I know I did. Because I'm not used to using Macs because they're nonsensical. Stupid. Yeah, again, he's singing this. You can't sing a song about, don't sing a song about your dad not liking you anyway when you're like 31 years old. Unless there was like an instance of like real physical or emotional abuse. But I
just wanted to play guitar. I didn't want to kick a football.
Yeah, write that poem when you're 14 years old, not when you're signed again to Capitol Records.
That R&B song, "Dance with My Father Again," written and was it Luther Vandross? A song I could not figure out. Were boys dancing with their fathers when they were younger?
I never danced with my father.
It was such a weird.
I mean, I danced with my father in a sense.
Hold on, shut up. He's crying.
Perfect.
We can't go back. I'm sorry, I can't be perfect. Oh, I love this song.
It's so bad.
Simple Plan was definitely amongst the more emos, like on the scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most. Oh, they were definitely there. Good Charlotte was trying to be like the punk version of emo. It was kind of a mix. And then Dashboard Confessional was, I think Chris Carrabba's, he just has a great voice. He's a good
songwriter. But his songwriting is just ridiculous.
I loved his song.
I mean, lyrically, in terms of writing a hook, the man was good at it. But again, I read like a 15-year-old's journal.
There were so many hits from Simple Plan.
Yeah, they were a massive band.
They were huge. I woke up and was until 11 just to figure out that something was gone. It's coming back to me.
Had a lot of friends, but I don't hear from them.
What's this feeling alone? When you're spending all the night alone.
When you're spending every day on your own.
Stop singing along. Can't hear you say it.
This is a good song.
So is this about him missing his friends or whatever?
Well, just no one liked him.
Maybe he's the problem. Has he ever done any sort of self-introspection?
Hello.
Gosh, clearly he is. He's in a band selling millions of records and no one wants to hang out with him?
What was the Good Charlotte hit?
Anthem?
This was before. And the other thing people don't really, like Maroon 5 kind of had an emo-ish band album.
That's what emo became. Emo was interesting for a while in that it was like poetic and.
So you're talking about people who got picked on. Do you remember this?
Yeah, I do. This is Anthem.
No, this is Little Things.
Yeah. Doesn't he say this is the anthem? Put your damn hands up in this song, though.
That's a song.
This is the anthem. Put your damn hands up.
Hold on. Here's the. Hold on.
Yeah, I remember this song.
Oh, this is a good song.
Not bad, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not bad. I don't know that. And I actually like some of My Chemical Romance and stuff too. I feel like they're kind of lengthy.
My Chemical Romance was also very good.
Album. Yeah.
This is the song that everybody knows. Everybody knows this, and it was out of 2000. I think it was 2000. Yeah, it was 2000. Everyone knows the song, and in a lot of ways, it does. It epitomizes an entire generation of teenagers. It's a very specific generation. You should already know it. Come on.
Her name is Noel.
Teenage Dirtbag.
Oh, this is a great song. This is also, by the way, a one-hit wonder. Name another Weedus.
I don't know who this band is. Is it No Further?
It's Weedus. Know.
It's who?
Weedus.
No idea. Yeah, it's a good tune. Like, how do you? I think one of the problems is how do you follow up a song like that? Like, it's almost like a gimmicky song.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the next one would have to be like, I'm just a middle-aged dirtbag now. I grew up a little bit. Like, you'd have to almost do a sequel. That was Meatloaf's problem.
AEB.
Yeah.
Stroke 9. Did you ever know them?
I did. Stroke 9, they had one song, Little Black Backpack.
Oh, such a good song.
It was a good tune.
Very oddly violent. He goes from 1 to 60 over a backpack.
He's really going quickly, yeah. Yes. Yeah, this almost has like a moody, almost Creed feel, and then it changes.
Definitely
overwrought. Like,
because listen, he doesn't want to talk about it.
No.
He doesn't even want to think about it.
Great hook.
Up, smack, turn around, he's on his back. Oh, such a good song.
You know what is actually kind of fun to listen to?
Do you remember?
Is the Chainsaw song by Limp Bizkit. Says, I'll get a chainsaw, I'll skin your bleep raw.
Oh, then I can't play that.
No, I know. I'm just telling people that Limp Bizkit is probably the most maligned band of all time in a lot of ways, rightfully so.
More than Creed
because Fred Durst is like
Nickelback.
He's so associated. Yeah, I mean, they're all to me lumped that are on like the same group of bands that are just instantly.
Yeah, just like these white guys who are doing a mix of like weird hip hop almost, but
I mean, the Fred Durst was it's because Rage Against the Machine ushered in this era of can have
inspired, I suppose, by Beastie.
Yeah,
but yes, there was a mix of
Beastie. They turned away from that really, really quickly. Rage Against the Machine, just a bunch of people listened to it and thought, oh, I could do something like this, and then did much, much worse versions of it. Fred Durst was one of those people. But it's really fun to revisit, because what I love about to go back and listen to music of previous generations is, like, we were all captivated by this for a little while. Like, Limp Bizkit was not a one-hit wonder. They had four or five major singles. Yeah. Like, you heard Nookie everywhere for, like, 4 months, and then they followed up with Rollin', which was just about driving, and the dance was just this.
It was just
bad. Driving.
But wasn't around that
time. What's next?
But then there was like the same version of that, but without the hard rock part. So it was like, remember Butterfly? You're my butterfly, sugar baby.
Yeah. That was oh my gosh. I interned for the uncle of the lead singers. His name was Chester Bennington. Chester Bennington.
I can't even find it on the thing.
Just write Chester Bennington.
Who?
Chester Bennington is the name of the lead singer.
Oh, Chester. It's not going to. Oh, here it is. Let's see. Chester Bennington. Queen of the Damned. That wasn't Queen of the Damned.
No, I'll find it.
Is the song not called Butterfly?
I don't know.
Come, my lady, come. Okay, hold on. I'm looking up the lyrics.
Oh, I didn't know he killed himself.
Oh, did he really?
No, Linkin Park. Is it Linkin Park?
It's not Linkin
Park. Oh, I was thinking Linkin Park. I didn't know the singer of Linkin Park hung himself.
Yeah, this was not too long ago, right? This was like 4 years ago, 5 years ago?
This song? Oh, yeah. No. Oh, yeah. Suicide was long ago. 2 years ago, 3 years ago. It's like Taylor from Billions.
It's catchy. It's not good, but it's catchy.
It reminds me of one of my favorite underrated movies of all time with Colin Hanks and Jack Black called Orange County. It's fantastic. It's so good. And that song is so integral to the plot.
Yes.
And
by the way, it was also part of the genre of movies where remarkable dancing by the cheerleaders, perfectly choreographed and happening in almost a surreal way. And it was so indicative of 90s and early 2000s.
Every prom.
Early 2000s movies.
Mid-90s.
Hanks. No, yeah. I don't think that was.
No, but I'm saying like.
Starting
the, yeah.
When he had the documentary on Tower Records, and we spent at least 10 minutes talking about Orange County.
That's all I would ever want to talk about. It's that and Fargo now at this point. But
I was very clever in how I brought it up. I said, you know what? When people do interviews with you, I know they always want to talk about two people who you were connected to. They're, of course, always going to want to talk about your mom and your dad, whom were played by Lithgow and Catherine O'Hara in Orange County.
And Catherine O'Hara's in it. What a stellar cast.
Catherine O'Hara is the single most underrated comedic actress.
Easily. Just stuns in everything.
They speak highly of her, but no one ever thinks Catherine O'Hara first.
And she can do the sentimental in Home Alone. And again in Home Alone 2. Possibly Home Alone 3.
It's going to be a little bit harder.
And she don't know he's got her best friend on the phone to wash her hair.
His I don't know this song.
All he gives to her, and he's got posters on the
wall. It's also possible this is a SoCal hit. This is big on Taylor.
And he needs everything to her. Her boyfriend, he don't know anything.
I'm certain I've heard it before, but it's not like, it's not something that just hits me as a memory.
He's the flavor of the week.
Flavor of the week. Okay. I think at this point I would move on to more legitimate forms of punk.
was early. This was 2001.
Yeah, at that point, I pretty much had.
Oh, is that when you were listening to the Aquabats?
No, I never listened to the Aquabats. They're not a legitimate form of punk.
So sad. This was like 8 years ago when I went to, what was the punk version of Bumbershoot? Warped Tour.
Yeah.
So we went to the Warped Tour at White River Amphitheater. And I've never felt more old in my life because everyone there was 14. It was everyone there was 14. But
all the musicians are 15.
Not the musicians. Not Newfound Glory, which I'm pretty sure are in their 60s. And they still do it. It was awful.
Because I went to my first Warped Tour, I think, when I was 16. Ugh. And like had a backpack full of my zines. I had a zine. And was trying to sell it. And, oh, God. But you're right. The average age, and it grows even more now. Actually, yes. If you go to a punk show now, you'll probably feel more age appropriate. Because there's not really new punk bands happening as much as there are. You're revisiting the old punk bands that you used to like. So, you know, I've liked a band called The Queers since I was 15. They must be like 65 now, but they're still touring. Honest to God, that's not even an exaggeration.
Well, what was Billy, what's his face? White-haired guy, Billy...
Idol?
Idol, thank you. He's still...
Oh, Billy Idol.
I saw him at Bumbershoot.
Yeah.
So here, I gotta go. It's getting ready. Go ahead.
He had a band called Generation X in like 1980. So he's gotta be 104.
Billy Idol?
4 years old. I just looked up. This is very old.
He weirdly looked pretty good, and he actually sounded pretty good.
Yeah. Well, he's always like known his vocal limitations. He's not really a great vocalist. So, yeah.
Here's Warped Tour 2019, just to give you a sense of what it was. So this was the last one that they had. The All American Rejects.
Okay. They're probably in their 40s now.
I like that. They're not that old. They're probably, I think they're our age. Andrew W.K., which I never understood.
He's got the one. He's just a nice guy. He's like
He's like that.
He's
like Henry Rollins in a way, but slightly harder core, I guess. Andy Black, I don't know who that is. Anti-Flag,
they're easily in their late 40s.
The Aquabats, they've got to be 50s?
I don't even know. They've been around for 25 years.
Younger. August Burns Red, a little bit younger. Bad Religion, that's old.
Bad Religion, they're definitely in their 60s because they started in like 81.
Face to Face. Were they?
Face to Face, yeah.
Were they?
Actually just became friends with their singer on Facebook. Disconnected.
I don't remember that one.
You wouldn't. It was big on K-Rock.
I'm familiar with the band.
And you should be. They play it on K-Rock constantly.
Oh, here it is. Hold on. Let's see.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I know that song.
Yeah.
Who else? Dance Gavin Dance is a name I've heard, but I don't know what that is. Fishbone. That's got to be.
Fishbone?
Yeah.
Fishbone was actually Face to Face and Fishbone were at the Warped Tour that I went to when I was 16. So they're crazy old.
They're crazy old. Good Charlotte, they're probably in their 40s now.
Yeah.
Gym Class Heroes, same-ish.
Same, yeah.
Less Than Jake?
Less Than Jake are theirs.
50s?
They've been around since 86, I think.
Okay, how about this? NoFX.
NoFX, though. I just watched a documentary on him. He's like 59, pushing 60. They still put on a really, really good live show. I don't know about these other bands. I haven't seen them all that recently.
The Offspring. But, that they were part of that like mid-90s.
Yeah.
The Offspring. That's good.
Yeah.
Ozo Motley, which never was punk and never was rock, and yet it always got played on K-Rock.
Yeah.
Save Ferris is still together.
Wow.
They only had like one, maybe two hits.
Yeah, but there's not that good. They're a ska punk band.
Good.
You got to have two or three of those on a Warped Tour.
Simple Plan.
Jeez. I wonder if he's still playing that song about his dad not liking him.
Sure.
Well, his dad's probably really dead.
Silverstein. Who's Silverstein? Because I know that.
Silverstein Pickups?
Just Silverstein.
No, I don't know that one. Hey, buddy. Yeah.
Here's their big hit. This was on Punk Goes Pop Volume 2. Apologize?
just can't make a sound.
It's like Richard Marx.
Oh, I remember that. Oh, no, this is because it's a remake of another song. Let's see. Starting Line. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
They were great. And he started a new band called Vacationer, which is, I saw them here at Numo's, and there were only 12 people there.
Yeah.
Sum 41. Wow.
Sum 41. Yeah, they broke about the same time Avril Lavigne did, because yep. Their singer was a couple. That's a good piece
is
of information.
Is that true? The Used. Who was he? Oh, The Used.
Yeah, The Used was Kelly Osbourne.
Yes. Okay. Kelly so Osbourne. They were also playing The Used.
Yeah.
Thrice, which is also very old. And We the Kings, which is not punk, and that I actually think is a Christian rock band. And The Vandals. Like
and The Vandals? The Vandals are
I mean, they're more on this, but I've never heard of them. So, yeah. No, the Vandals are Vandals and Bad Religion on this list are probably the oldest.
Probably the oldest, yeah.
Well,
see, but there's nobody new. You got this, but everybody well, there no, will be.
So that's not totally true. I mean, there's
but
not
pretty much.
And there might be people on here that are new. I just don't, because I didn't go through. List.
All like, the headliners are just punk bands we're revisiting as, you know, middle-aged discontent.
It's funny that there's a whole group of, and 311 is also there. There's just like a group of like 14, 15-year-olds who are looking at this and they're saying, yeah, this is punk. I mean, and they're technically right.
Yeah. No, it's true.
MC Lars. MC Lars is not punk.
I don't know who MC Lars is.
MC Lars is a sort of a DJ. He almost sounds like New Radicals. He's the son of Jay Thomas, who is an actor. He was an actor.
Yeah. Murphy Brown or something, right?
From Murphy Brown. And I want to say he was also on Cheers, but maybe.
I think he had a show on Sirius Satellite Radio for a while.
It's a big part of why I got into radio.
Oh, is it really?
He was a morning show host in L.A. that I used to listen to. He died a few, like 5 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, my food's ready. I'm going to sear my filet mignon that I've been sous-vide.
Enjoy it.
Bye, everybody. I guess
next week, let me know how it was.
Until then, thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye.